Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Now your ideas don't have to wait. Now they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas. Loves expanding your business and evolving your passions. They push what technology can do so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to now.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Tech Stuff, a production from iHeartRadio.
Hey there, and welcome to Tech Stuff. I'm your host, Jonathan Strickland. I'm an executive producer with iHeart Podcasts, and how the tech are ya? So, long time no podcast, y'all. The last time I actually recorded a new episode, it was about CT scanning machines. And I talked about how I had just had my first CT scan. That was on December 30th of 2023 when that happened. And it was all part of a medical emergency I experienced over that last weekend of 2023. But guess what? The very same day that I was recording that episode, I ended up having another emergency and I had to go right back to the hospital. My blood pressure had spiked again. It got to the point where I was completely incoherent, more so than usual. You know, I realize my coherence is a spectrum. Well, this was off of it. And I honestly only remember the second half of what happened at the hospital once I was moved into the intensive care unit or ICU. Before that, apparently I spent several hours in the emergency room, but I have no memory of it. I was told I even received a lumbar puncture, which, as I understand it, those are pretty painful. But none of that is in my mind. But a group of doctors and nurses took very good care of me, both in the ER and the ICU. And as I am recording this now, I'm just back from getting from the hospital. I had to go in for a surgical procedure that is connected to all the emergency stuff. The surgery went pretty well. The recovery has been rough, but hopefully this will get me toward being on the right track. It has been a heck of a way to start off 2024. And as I mentioned in that last new episode from me, I am scaling back on the number of shows that I do per week. One contributing factor to the blood pressure issue is stress, and we figured that reducing my stress should be a little bit helpful. Now, that's just one part of what I'm doing to get better. It's not like cutting back is going to magically make me healthy. I have to do a lot of other stuff. I'm on medication. I've got a new approach to my diet and exercise, which was well overdue. So it's just one piece of a bigger puzzle. Anyway, enough of all that. One of the many things that I missed out on while I was in the hospital was CES, which sometimes is also referred to as the Consumer Electronics Show, although I think now they just prefer to have it called CES. And in case you're not familiar with this event, CES is a huge trade industry conference in the United States in which companies come together in Las Vegas, Nevada every January to focus on all things in the consumer electronics space and beyond, if we're being honest. Consumer electronics is really just one part of it, which might be why they prefer to call it just CES these days. It's at CES where manufacturers and retailers will show off products intended to launch within the next year or so. Sometimes they just show off things like prototypes that are never going to see the light of day, but might show off some features that could find their way into products in the future. Various members of the media attend in an effort to get really cool stories. And, you know, you got other industry professionals who go for all sorts of reasons, you know, analysts and such. Most of them are really looking for ways to find free food. At least in my experience, that's kind of what the main priority seems to be. And every year at CES, trends emerge. Sometimes these trends will establish themselves and eventually become a pillar in technology. Like, think about flat screen televisions. I mean, that's the common form factor now, but once upon a time it wasn't. And when those started to pop up, they eventually did become the standard. Or things like Bluetooth connectivity and smart home technology, those fall into these categories too. Now, other times, various industries will push really hard to get a technology kind of established in order to make it a trend, and it ends up going nowhere. So the one I always cite is 3D television. When I first started going to CES, which was back in the mid-2000s, all the major companies in the television space were gung-ho on 3D televisions. There was a ton of support behind 3D TV within the film and TV industries, you know, because 3D formats would be a lot harder for people to pirate than your typical visual media. So the studios were really gung-ho on 3D TV as well, because they were like, well, if this means people can't just steal our stuff and they have to buy it from us, then that means more money. So let's definitely make 3D television a thing. I mean, what better way to crack down on those pesky pirates than to convince them that they all have to watch the stuff in 3D? And, you know, a lot of pirates can't even watch stuff in 3D because they got eye patches, which means they have a lack of depth perception. That's a parallax joke. Anyway, the whole gambit for 3D television didn't work out. Consumers rejected 3D TV. Most folks decided they didn't want to have to wear glasses just to watch television in their homes, or that having yet another component that could go missing was a real hassle. Like, if you've ever been one of those folks who's like, where the heck did the remote control go? Imagine doing that with glasses as well. Or they were arguing that there just wasn't enough compelling material that was in 3D to justify the investment of purchasing one of these televisions. So after a couple of valiant years of trying to make 3D happen, it followed in the footsteps of Fetch and didn't happen. This year was no exception. There were other trends that came out this year. A few different ones popped up, like transparent OLED television displays. There were a few of those, and I'll probably do an episode talking about that in the future. But undeniably, one type of tech really dominated conversation at the show floor this year, and that was artificial intelligence. And we all know that AI is a big deal. Companies like Microsoft and Google and Amazon and Apple are all struggling to find ways to incorporate AI into their business models in a way that benefits them. And that might also mean that these companies will make cuts to actual human staff in the process if they find that the AI can take on some of the load that people would normally carry. And if you read up on any business conference, any conference that has happened in the last year and a half, you're going to see a lot of discussion will be devoted to AI and how it's going to change everything. And often at these exact same conferences, at these exact same speeches, you're going to find hardly any detail as to how we're going to get there or what strategies companies should employ while forging the path. It just becomes like, this will change everything. How? It becomes like the underpants gnomes in South Park. You just have a bunch of question marks, and then at the end it says profit. So essentially, everyone knows that AI is powerful and it's important, but we don't have wide agreement on how it should be developed or deployed. Also, it's not like this was the first time that AI was part of the conversation at CES. In recent years, lots of companies have leaned on AI for all sorts of things, from voice assistants to image recognition, to robot navigation. If I'm being honest, I would say the AI on display this year more often seemed to lean on the large language model and generative AI versions of artificial intelligence, the kind of stuff that we've been seeing so much about from companies like OpenAI and Google. And I get it. They're very flashy, and they are impressive when they're working properly, but it gives a very narrow view of what artificial intelligence is, and AI is so much more than just large language models and generative AI. But unfortunately, that's harder to sell. So it gets easier if you just kind of reduce it all to one form and say, like, this is what AI is. I don't think that's very wise because it's misleading, but, you know, I'm one voice in a big crowd. Now, there were a couple of major approaches that I saw while reading up on how various companies were positioning AI in their pitches to the media over at CES. The big companies, generally speaking, were actually a little less bullish. You know, they didn't position AI as being a definitive feature in their technologies. That did not seem to be the big thing. Like, it wasn't like a big flashing neon sign saying this has AI in it. So in their products, AI was often a component that they might mention as contributing to the functionality, but it wasn't positioned as being the main event. Now, some smaller companies went in the opposite direction. They developed products that put artificial intelligence front and center, like this is AI. And we're still seeing some examples of companies that are shoving AI into their marketing message, even if it seems like they still don't quite have a handle on how AI adds value or functionality, or in some cases, I'm not entirely convinced that AI is actually part of the whole thing in the first place. Sometimes it just seems like we need to put AI in there because that's a buzzword that if we don't put it in there, it's going to seem like we're falling behind. But I would argue that at least in some of the cases I was looking at, AI really was a grandiose way of saying whatever it was the product was supposed to do. So let's get started. Let's talk about an implementation that I actually think is a pretty good idea. And it's BMW's use of a technique called retrieval augmented generation. So BMW has a voice assistant that you can get in certain BMW vehicles, and it uses generative AI to respond to your requests. But this voice assistant can't just chat about anything at all. It's not granted access to a limitless selection of topics. So you can't just be like on a long road trip and you're like, let's start talking about Sartre, or can we have a deep discussion about Lord of the Rings? It can't do that. Instead, this voice assistant can really only provide information about the vehicle itself. So this restriction means that the voice assistant isn't prone to hallucinations or confabulations. So that's the tendency for generative AI to just plain make stuff up on occasion, right? Sometimes AI, in the lack of information, will make something up and it sounds like it's reliable, but it turns out it's completely false. This is why AI critics warn that without strong guidelines, AI could manufacture and distribute misinformation in such a way that the misinformation seems like it's reliable. And it's not malicious. It's not that the AI is trying to mislead. It's just trying to answer a question and doesn't have the answer. And like some other people I know, it's too scared to say, I don't know the answer to that question. So BMW built a barrier around their voice assistant's knowledge base to prevent this from happening. They said, well, it's only going to be restricted to matters that involve the vehicle itself. So the assistant draws upon the power of Amazon's Alexa large language model, and it can interpret what you mean when you ask questions. So that way, even if you are not a car person and you don't really know how to frame a question properly, like you don't know what you're asking about, you're just trying to find an answer to something you don't know the answer to, well, this assistant can still try to help you get to where you need to go. Like, what information do you need to know? It can actually ask follow-up questions to you in order to get a better understanding of what it is you're asking about. So, like, if you don't know what it is you don't know, it can at least ask follow-up questions to try and narrow down what the matter is. And then it can simplify explanations if you find something too technical to follow. You could say, can you explain that to me in plain English? And it can reduce the complexity and do it. Now, the beauty of this is that the voice assistant becomes sort of an interactive owner's manual that's capable of rephrasing passages if they just don't make sense to you, which is great. If you've ever flipped through a car owner manual and encountered stuff where you're like, this doesn't seem like a human being wrote this. I don't understand what they're actually getting at. Well, imagine that it would be able to rephrase it so that it could convey that meaning to you. Like, that to me is incredibly valuable. So, for example, if your vehicle has multiple drive modes, right, and you have no clue which drive mode should be used in any given situation, the assistant can help. You could ask it. And you might find out that if you were to switch to a different driving mode, you're going to get way better performance on the roads that you're currently driving on, and your drive is going to be far more pleasant. Or maybe that by making a few other changes, you can dramatically decrease the amount of fuel consumption you're going through and save some money. I think that's a pretty neat idea. Now, I should say that the description I read about this tool was done as part of a non-interactive demonstration. So the reporter whose report I read is Tim Stevens. He wrote a piece for Ars Technica, and he was not allowed to ask any questions of the voice assistant himself. So he could not interact with it. Instead, he had to just witness a kind of a performance almost. So BMW representatives ran the whole demo, and it's hard to say for, you know, how far along this product is or how reliable it is or whether or not you could prompt it to make a mistake, because often that becomes a thing where people will try to get AI things to mess up to see if, in fact, it's possible, because it's better to find out through testing than to find out through actual use. But I think this is an AI implementation that really makes sense, and I could easily see other companies and other industries making similar use of this technology to make it easier to navigate increasingly complex systems, not just vehicles, but all sorts of stuff. Like, I can see businesses that are incorporating generative AI to do it in this kind of way, where they are effectively geofencing the AI so that it's only focused on the things that are pertinent to the business. That just makes sense to me. Okay, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I'm going to talk a lot more about AI at CES 2024.
Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Now your ideas don't have to wait. Now they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business and evolving your passions. They push what technology can do, so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to now.
Today I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward. Inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
Okay, we're back. So we talked about BMW's approach, which I thought was really cool. I don't know if the tool itself is cool. I just think the strategy makes sense. But let's contrast BMW's rather focused application with a handheld device that is completely dependent upon AI and large language models, or large action models, I probably should say, and that is the Rabbit R1. So this gadget got a ton of attention at CES, at least from the media. As I understand it, it did not really go viral over on Twitter. I'm not on Twitter anymore, so I just have to take other people's word for it. But like whenever I went to any outlet if I were looking at Wired or The Verge or Ars Technica or anything, there were articles, CNET, the articles about this thing, the RabbitR1. This kind of happens at the show occasionally, right? If you go to CES, sometimes a particular thing will stand out. And it's usually something that's not from a big company. It's usually something that's kind of a surprise. And it often can be a small thing, but it just captures everyone's attention and then it generates tons of articles. So, like in past years, there was a vibrating fork, which was a real thing. It was a fork that had a little haptic motor inside of it. And if it detected that you were eating too quickly, it would vibrate so that the food would fall off your fork, forcing you to eat more slowly. That was the whole concept. That was a big deal one year. The Pebble smartwatch was a huge deal one year. And that doesn't even exist anymore. You know, Fitbit purchased that and then kind of killed it off. So the Pebble, it shows that these little things that can become viral and get everyone's attention and get a lot of excitement, that doesn't mean that they are guaranteed to stick around. They're not guaranteed to be a success. The Pebble was huge and doesn't exist anymore. So that can raise the question, will the RabbitR1 have better luck than, say, the Pebble? Well, let's talk about what it is first. So it's a handheld device. It's kind of square-ish in shape. It's about half the height of your typical smartphone, so it's not as big as a smartphone. Most of the front face of this device is covered with a touchscreen. That touchscreen typically has a sort of cyber rabbit icon face on it. To the right of the screen is a little physical scroll wheel. It's mounted so that you can scroll up or down with it. Above that is a forward-facing camera. It has a SIM card port. It's got Wi-Fi and Bluetooth connectivity. It's got a speaker. It's got a microphone. It's got a few more things. But the physical stuff isn't really where the story is with this device. See, the company behind the RabbitR1, Rabbit, in other words, says that it wants to create the next generation of computers. But these computers should be able to interface with all the functions we rely on today without us having to deal with the actual applications that provide us those functions. So, for example, rather than having to open up an application or a program and run a function, you could just tell the computer what it was you wanted to have happen, and the computer would do it. So these computers should be able to interface with all the functions we rely on today on behalf of us. They can act as almost like a middleman. So for example, I could get a smartphone and download and install apps on my phone to do all sorts of stuff, like to call a cab or a rideshare. I could have an app to order food. I could have a different app so I could listen to music, a different app so I could watch films, or maybe I have apps that are various games. But I have to download and install each of those apps in order to do that. And obviously, lots of different companies make these apps, so these interfaces aren't universal, right? So it might actually take me a little while to learn how to navigate those apps properly, because one app may use one kind of interface, another app might use a different one. And I don't know if you've had the experience where you've opened up programs and like you have that moment where you realize, oh, the shortcut I'm trying to use doesn't work because that's actually for a totally different program. I have it happen all the time, but then I'm also getting old and broken and perhaps senile. So maybe that's just a Jonathan problem. But what if instead of doing all that, my device just took those steps out and just interfaced directly with the underlying platforms? What if all I needed to do was to tell my computer, order me a deep dish Chicago pizza to get here by 5 p.m. And the computer, acting like a personal assistant, handles the entire transaction. And what if I could do any kind of transaction that way? Not just ordering pizza. Maybe I need to order a ride. Maybe I want to watch the latest episode of True Detective. Maybe I have a list of things I want to do. Like, maybe I want to do a full-fledged vacation. And I need to do things like I need to book flights, I need to secure a hotel room, I need to get tickets for a walking tour I was interested in, I want to make a dinner reservation for a particular restaurant. What if I just had a gadget and I just told it all these things I needed it to do and it took care of all of that for me in one go, right? That's the kind of idea behind the Rabbit R1. The company says the secret sauce is a system they call a large action model. And it's this model that figures out how to interface with all the different services out there in order to get the result that you desire, whether that's pizza delivery or an update on your health records or whatever it might be. There are a lot of unanswered questions when it comes to this actual approach, like how can the product and system ensure privacy and data security, for example? As is often the case at CES, answers to the hard questions didn't really take center stage. Instead, folks got swept up with this idea of a device that, you know, possibly could do all these things. And in just over a week, Rabbit had sold out of its pre-order inventory that it set aside. And then it sold out of the next batch that it set aside. And then the next one. And it keeps going. At $199 a pop, it's a pricey piece of technology, but admittedly, it's significantly cheaper than your typical smartphone. So you could argue, well, if you wanted to free yourself of a smartphone, then maybe you could use this. Now, granted, you can't use this thing as a smartphone. It's not intended to be a smartphone, but you could use it to do all these other tasks. Now, some evangelists have already talked about how the device lets you do lots of stuff that we do use smartphones for today, but it removes pesky things like notifications and distractions. So if you're someone who's like, I'm so sick of getting text messages and phone calls and all these little pop-ups and stuff, I just want to be able to do what I need to do when I need to do it and then not be bothered. That I could see where you'd be really, you'd find the appeal of the Rabbit R1. Maybe you go back to having just a phone at home and an answering machine or something similar to that, where you're not carrying your communications device with you everywhere. I think a lot of people, at least on one level, think that's attractive. But when you start really thinking about the convenience of having a communications device on you, it does, I mean, that's a strong use case, right? Like, as someone who has been through a couple of medical emergencies recently, I can tell you, having a communications device on you is invaluable at times. But, you know, it does seem like it would be cool to have a gadget that could handle these things. And, you know, you just tell it what you want and it handles all the details. That does seem pretty nice. But as one YouTuber, Varun Maya, and I apologize for the butchering of your name, I saw his YouTube video about the Rabbit R1, and he made some really good points, some criticisms about this. And he said that the Rabbit R1's place in the pantheon of established technology is by no means assured. He argues that the use case for the R1 is pretty limited. And if you were to actually look at how much time the typical person spends on their smartphone and then take another step and say, all right, let's break that down. What are you using that time to do? Like, what are you mostly doing on your smartphone? He argues that you would only see a tiny fraction of the use time that would go to interfacing with apps in this way for doing things like ordering, say, a ride-hailing service or food or something. He says, yeah, people do that, but that's like 5 or 6 minutes a day. If you were to look at how much time they're spending on their phone, most of their time is spent consuming content, right? Watching videos, listening to podcasts, you know, that sort of stuff, but not booking travel or ordering food or whatever. So his argument is that there's actually not enough of a use case to justify purchasing the R1. That, yeah, it might work. If it does work, we don't know because we only got to see some demonstrations and stuff, but it's only taking off if it's taking off like 5 minutes of work a day, that's hardly valuable, right? It's not like that's a huge load off of you. It's not a big enough departure from the smartphone to necessitate it. Plus, and this is a really good argument, I think, it stands to reason that smartphone manufacturers are going to experiment with their own approach to things like large action models, which means you're likely to see Rabbit R1 functionality finding its way into established smartphone lines in the future, right? Whether it's Apple's Siri or Google's Assistant, that kind of thing. You would expect to see these companies start to build those capabilities into their own tools, which means, well, you don't need the R1 anyway. You're going to still want a phone, and your phone is going to end up doing the same thing the R1 does. So why would you need a separate device to do those things? It's kind of like why most people, not everyone, but most people don't bother having their own like separate MP3 player anymore, right? You don't need an iPod or anything like that. You can just use your smartphone to access music. So for that reason, most people don't carry around iPods or MP3 players. Why would you carry around a separate AI device? Still, it was neat seeing something that was different from everything else that showed up in Las Vegas, right? It was nice to see something that did not look like everything else. The design is also kind of, it's got this sort of retro cool thing to it. It looks a little clunky. It actually makes me think of the 70s because it was in bright orange. And I associate the 70s with like oranges and browns. And it, you know, it was like a little square box. And I was like, well, this feels like it was like technology that was imagined in the 70s. It's got this little scroll wheel thing. And yeah, but I thought it was cool. A neat idea. And I think the idea of having AI that can interface with these different platforms, I think that's interesting too. I do think that there is some value in that. Like, especially if you're on a vacation or something and you want to be able to arrange a bunch of stuff, but you don't want to take up time on your vacation to do it, I could see that being really valuable. So I can definitely see this evolving from here. I don't know that the Rabbit R1 is going to stick around. There's also the question of if Rabbit were to encounter financial difficulties. Like, the company's really young. It launched in like October of last year. It has not been around for very long at all, which should also raise some questions about things like how likely is this device to work. But if it doesn't stick around, then does that mean the R1 just becomes a paperweight, right? A $200 paperweight? Because if it doesn't have the connectivity to any underlying services, presumably this device doesn't have a massive amount of processing power. If it's $200, there's no way it's got really high-end components inside of it. It must be relying upon, you know, cloud and edge-based computing. If the company that's behind all that goes under, then presumably that functionality goes away. So I don't want to see them fail. I think it would be really cool if they succeed. But I would warn people to consider it carefully before plunking down $200 that they might not ever see again for something that ends up being interesting, but then ultimately fuels other companies to create similar tools and the R1 gets lost in the shuffle. But who knows? Maybe like a year from now, Rabbit's going to become like one of the big names in consumer AI. All right, we're going to take another quick break. When we come back, I'm going to talk about some other AI components and consumer goods that were shown off at CES and talk a little bit about whether or not I think they're interesting. But first, let's take this quick break.
Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Now your ideas don't have to wait. Now they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business and evolving your passions. They push what technology can do so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to Now.
Today I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward. Inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
Okay, so we're back. Now, I got a question for you. Would you sleep better if you knew that artificial intelligence was in your pillow? because the motion pillow is a pillow that is outfitted with AI, according to the company behind it. So you might say, why? Why is there AI in a pillow? Well, the idea is that this pillow can monitor your sleep and detect when you do things like snore. And snoring indicates that your breathing pathway is obstructed. And so you're not getting as much air as your body wants. So if the pillow, if it detects that you're starting to snore, it will activate pumps to inflate little balloons within the pillow to help raise your head in an effort to clear your airway. And it also includes other stuff inside it as well, like sensors that are meant to keep track of how well you sleep, right? Are you staying nice and still? Are you moving around a lot? Are you getting up in the middle of the night? And it can give you sort of a score in the morning indicating how well you slept the night before. Now, as someone who personally, very soon I'm going to have to do a sleep study, because that's another part of the follow-up. They want to check me for sleep apnea. I understand the appeal of a device like this, right? The idea of, here's something that can help me deal with sleep apnea and I'll get better rest and I don't have to worry about all that other stuff. Like, I don't have to worry about getting a CPAP machine or anything like that. I actually worry that some folks might lean on technology like this in an effort to bypass the need to consult with physicians about this kind of thing. I do think technology can help. Don't get me wrong. I think that having technology to help support a healthy lifestyle is a good idea. I just worry that people will rely on the tech rather than rely on medical assistance, and they won't get the quality and quantity of help that they really need. But still, I think it's a neat idea. I don't know how I would feel about plunking down nearly $700 for a pillow, though, because that's how much it costs. At that point, I think I might be thinking more of the CPAP machine, because as much as I don't want to look like a Star Wars alien when I go to bed, I would like to have something that has a good track record and potentially my insurance could help me pay for it. But, I don't know. Maybe the pillow is a really good idea. Now, I did mention that pillow has a lot of components in it that are mirroring things that you find in fitness trackers, right? Like, there are a lot of fitness trackers out there that you're supposed to wear when you go to sleep, and they'll track your sleep. Well, we saw lots of other fitness trackers at CES 2024. No big surprise. They have been a huge thing there for years now. And this year we saw a couple that were meant for our four-legged friends. Again, not totally new. I've seen this sort of stuff before, but Invoxia introduced a dog collar it calls Mini Tails, and it includes stuff like a GPS tracker, very useful if your dog happens to get away. It also has health sensors to monitor things like heart rate and breathing and that kind of stuff. And it also includes an AI element so that if you wanted to check in and see what your puppers was doing while you were, say, off at work, you could open up an app, you could see if they were sacked out or if maybe they had a serious case of the zoomies. So the AI's purpose, from what I was reading on this description, is to interpret what your dog is actually doing based upon the data it's gathering. So if your dog's heart rate is elevated and if its breathing is faster, then, and GPS is giving indications, it could say, your dog's running around, right? Because it's not like there's, a clear running around indicator on there. The AI is making an interpretation. So I think that's kind of an interesting concept. It's probably one of the fuzzier AI things that we're talking about today. This collar is $99, which for a fitness tracker isn't terrible, but it also requires a monthly subscription of $25. And that does start to pile up. And just like I was saying with the R1, it makes you, worried if you're paying a subscription. That usually indicates that the functionality of the device is dependent upon ongoing support from a backend. And if that means that the company, for whatever reason, has trouble, then you may no longer get that support, which means your smart collar just becomes a regular old collar. And it becomes a $100 collar that does the same thing as just a regular, fabric-based collar would do, or leather or whatever. So Yeah. Again, buyer beware. I don't think, you know, if you really want to buy these things, I don't think there's anything wrong with it. I just think knowing ahead of time the risks involved in purchasing something that could eventually become kind of a dumb version of what it once was due to a company dropping support, I think that's a good thing to know. The gamers out there already know this really well because there are a lot of games that over years have lost features due to companies either going under or just stopping support. Now, there were a couple of smart mirror devices at CES 2024 that leaned a little bit on AI. One of them, the BeMind smart mirror, claimed it could help users practice mental wellness activities to improve their state of mind. So imagine you're the evil queen in Snow White and you walk up to the magic mirror and you demand that it proclaim you as the fairest of the land. And instead, the mirror adjusts the lighting to a more soothing color and brightness and encourages you to find value within yourself rather than to seek validation from others or something. I've only read about this mirror, so I'm not entirely sure how it works or how extensive this AI actually is. I mean, it could be that it's a relatively small library of responses that it can provide based upon your prompts, but I don't have any idea. If it's something that can make more, you know, extensive interpretations, that's really interesting, but I don't know that. Another mirror-like gadget is the Anura Magic Mirror, which looked to me more like a screen than a mirror. Sort of like how some people use the forward-facing camera on their phone to do stuff like check their makeup and that kind of thing. Anyway, this gadget can perform a full face scan. Apparently it takes like half a minute. And then it analyzes your face to determine a bunch of stuff, like what your blood pressure and heart rate happens to be, that kind of thing. And maybe I should get one of these because, you know, I need to keep track of that sort of stuff. Or maybe I should just keep using my blood pressure cuff and just to use that. Anyway, according to the company, the planned customer base isn't for the average person. Instead, it's for stuff like doctor's offices and gyms and that kind of thing. We also got more than a few robots at CES 2024. That's to be expected. Every year that I've attended, I've seen tons of robots. Some end up being fairly simple, like there might be a robot that's essentially kind of like a smart shopping cart that will follow behind a specific person and act as kind of like a little robotic valet and carry their stuff. Others can get much more complicated, or at the very least can fulfill more complicated tasks. So this year, there were a couple that I saw lots of folks mention in particular. I mean, there were tons of robots. Don't get me wrong, like hundreds of different types of robots. But two that a lot of people specifically wrote features on, one came from LG, but I couldn't find like a real specific official name for it. Although the one I saw referenced it as the Smart Home AI Agent. That just doesn't seem very snappy to me. But it's part of IG's zero labor home concept. And it's a very cute little robot. It's got two stubby little legs that end in wheels. And its body looks like a horizontal cylinder. So like imagine like a canister on its side, but it's being held up by these two legs with wheels on the end. And it looks like it's wearing a little pair of headphones. It's got a little digital screen with digital eyes in it. I really wish I could have seen this thing in person. It's so adorable in pictures. So according to LG, it is essentially a moving smart home hub. So it's meant to interface with other smart home appliances and such, so that you can control your home by talking to your plastic pal who's fun to be with. Shout out if you happen to get that reference. So this device has facial recognition capabilities. That means it can learn to recognize the various members of the household. It can monitor the home. It has a built-in camera, so it can patrol and keep an eye on things. It can also check on various factors like air temperature, humidity, and air quality within the home and alert you if any of those are in ranges that are perhaps unhealthy. And it's even supposed to be able to figure out if you're in a good mood or not. So the idea is that you get home, this little robot rolls up and looks adoringly into your face and then tries to figure out if you're happy or if you're grouchy or whatever. Then immediately it begins to select settings and content to help you out with the various smart home appliances in your home. So maybe you come home, it looks at you and it can tell that you're all stressed out. So it immediately starts to set the lights to a kind of calm, lower level. and plays soothing music on a smart speaker and puts a silence on notifications for the time being so that you don't flip out. I have no idea if this thing is ever actually going to be an actual product, but I can definitely see the appeal of it. Samsung also got some buzz by showing off an update to its Bali robot, or Bali, depending on how you pronounce it. I watched a video where it was from Samsung. They had both pronunciations in there, but it's a B-A-L-L-I-E. I would think it's Bali because it is shaped like a ball. Now, Samsung first introduced Bali back in 2020, but this 2024 version has a few extra bells and whistles. Now, like I said, it's rather ball-shaped, but it uses, again, a pair of thin wheels, you know, one on either side of the ball that helps it move around the environment. And this new version of Bali has a projector built into it, which allows it to project images on floors or walls or ceilings, essentially being able to turn any surface into a video screen. So a promotional video showed folks using Bali to create an impromptu video calling screen or to turn a wall into a television or even project stuff on a floor in an effort to entertain a golden retriever, which I think is unnecessary because we all know golden retrievers have like 2 brain cells, so you really don't need to work that hard. Anyway, like LG's robot, Samsung showed off that Bali is meant to interact with smart devices and thus give the robot control over appliances and Internet of Things gadgets throughout the home. So like the LG one, you could use it to do things like adjust the thermostat or change what's playing on the smart speakers or change the lighting. It can also, like the LG one, it can also patrol and keep an eye out on things that are going on back at home base while you're out and about. So those were some of the robots. I mean, like I said, there were tons of others. There was one that was a few people mentioned that was like a combination robot that was a couple of different appliances with one big appliance acting as like the docking station for the roving robot that could mop. It was a washing machine and mop combo. And the mop part could wander around the house and mop and then dock with the washing machine and offload the dirty water through the washing machine's drain so that you didn't even have to empty the mop. It could fill itself with clean water and empty the dirty water, which I think was a pretty cool idea. So a lot of different stuff like that. But moving on, let's talk about NVIDIA, because that was another company that's heavily entrenched in AI. And that should come as no surprise, because it has been manufacturing powerful processors that have been tweaked to support AI functionality for the past couple of years. Powering artificial intelligence requires a whole lot of oomph, and NVIDIA has a rep for building chips that are very much oomph-centric, whether it's to provide the best performance for a state-of-the-art gaming PC or a computer system that's running artificial intelligence applications. The company held a special address during CES to talk about how its products will power the tech of tomorrow. And it can be challenging to walk away from stuff like CES and not have a feeling that at least some companies are still more than a little wishy-washy when it comes to AI. You've got companies like NVIDIA that can very firmly point at how they support AI functionality. But when it comes to the companies that are building the actual AI implementations, it gets a little more vague. You might have limited implementations. You might have some very loose definitions that don't make a very strong stance as to how AI is a factor. But we do need to remember that artificial intelligence itself is kind of on thin ice at the moment. There are governments around the world that are taking a very close look at AI and are starting to consider the sorts of regulations that may be needed to keep AI from going all Terminator on us. And companies need to keep that in mind too. It may be necessary one day to walk back some AI strategies. So diving wholeheartedly into AI tech could end up being a costly mistake. And that might be one reason why companies are a little slow to do so. It's not just that it's hard to figure out how do we do this in a way that makes sense. It's also, how can we do this in a way where we don't overcommit? And if governments decide to push back hard against AI, we haven't gotten into a position where we've, you know, overinvested in an area of business that ultimately doesn't pan out. So that also opens up opportunities for smaller companies like Rabbit to potentially cash in, but I'm still not convinced that Rabbit will see much success beyond its initial launch. Maybe I'm wrong. We'll have to wait and see. It's a really weird situation. We already have and use so much technology that has various elements of AI built into it. Like, again, AI is not new. You know, your smartphone has AI components built into it. It's something that's everywhere all around us. It's clear, it's obvious AI is going to be a big part of our technology moving forward. There's no denying it. But at the same time, I think most of us recognize that AI also has the potential to do amazing things, but potentially also terrible things. So here's hoping that companies make the best choices and that our refrigerators don't rise up against us, because I'm pretty sure it could take me. Anyway, that's kind of a roundup on an overview of what was going on with AI over at CES. As I said, that was just one small thing that happened at CES this year. I might do another episode talking about some of the technologies that were shown off to go into further detail, like those transparent OLED screens. It's something we had been hearing about for a very long time, and we had even seen some prototypes in the past. But man, they were on display like crazy this past year from what I've seen. And I'm kind of sad that I missed seeing them in person. Not so sad that, you know, I would have traded all that wonderful time I spent going to various doctor's appointments. Anyway, enough about all that. I hope you are all well. I'm so glad to be back recording. I look forward to doing that 3 times a week. I'm thinking about news episodes on Fridays and then other just regular tech stuff episodes on Mondays and Wednesdays. And it's a pleasure to be back in the saddle and recording again. I hope you are all well. I hope you all take very good care of yourselves. Go see your doctors on a regular basis. Trust me on this. You don't want to fall into the same trap I did. And I'll talk to you again really soon. Tech Stuff is an iHeartRadio production. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
With dozens of streaming services, box office films, and content to choose from, people are spending over 2.5 years of their lives searching for what to watch. But The Hollywood Reporter brings you THR Charts, one place for you, your family, and friends to find the most watched TV shows and movies every week. THR Charts is a guide to help you spend less time scrolling through platforms so that you can spend more time watching and binging the content everyone is talking about, all supported by data and trusted sources like Nielsen, Comscore, and Paired Analytics. Check out THR Charts on HollywoodReporter.com.